morning. And welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I need a program. Okay, I hope you're not all as addled as I am. I overslept by 1 hour, which is odd for me. Plus, there's still that turkey residue, although I didn't eat any turkey, but you know, that, whew, I'm still full. Welcome. I see some people I haven't seen for a long time. It's great to have you. If you are new here or visiting, there will be a time a little later on in the service where we will ask you to introduce yourselves if you want to. You do not have to. And if this is one of your first times and you live in this area, you're not just visiting for the Thanksgiving weekend, we strongly urge you to come back because our services are very different on different Sunday mornings. I am Sandy Ingham. I'm Prairie's halftime minister. Obviously, sometimes I do the service. Sometimes people from within the congregation do it, and sometimes speakers from outside do our service. But we welcome you, no matter where you are, no matter your ethnicity, no matter your gender orientation, no matter your sexual preference, no matter your abilities or non-abilities, we welcome you wherever you are on this journey of life. The opening words then are these. Welcome to this place of possibility. This is love's hearth, the home of hope, a refuge for minds in search of truth unfolding, ever beautiful, ever strange. Here, compassion is our shelter, freedom our protection from the storms of bigotry and hate. In this place, may we find comfort and courage. Here may our sight become vision to see the unseen and to glimpse the good that is yet to be. The letters UUSC stand for Unitarian Universalist Service Committee. And this morning I'll mostly use the letters, not all those words. Every year, the guest at your table boxes, or G-A-Y-T, more letters, the gate boxes arrive here at Prairie. And every year, the program committee, the director of religious education and the RE committee, and sometimes the social action committee, and I ponder how to present these boxes to you. We also mull over the related challenge of how to tell you about the UUSC without causing your eyes to glaze over or close, without having you daydream through our presentation, because we are all so jaded, aren't we? All the woes, all the suffering, all the pain and sorrow in the world, it is so often too much, isn't it? And what, after all, can we do about it? Not much, we conclude. The problems are too big, too overwhelming, too complex to solve. You're wrong. There is much we can do. That way of thinking that there isn't anything to do is too simplistic. There's much being done that we don't even know about. We need to look no farther than our own UUSC in terms of solving the problems of the world. You would be hard pressed to find a better organization. The UUSC is the best bang for your buck that you'll find anywhere. And I'll bet many of you really either never heard of it or never think about it. But one of the best gifts that you can give during any holiday season is to put money into the gate boxes. Very easy to assemble, too. If I can do it, anybody. And thank you, Kate, you know who you are, for retrieving these for me. So this is one of the best things you can do, is to put money into this box or checks into the UUSC envelopes or into our offering plate. Or, Kathy, I have a question for the treasurer. If people want to write out checks, give money to the UUSC, to guests at your table, do they write the check out to Prairie, or would you prefer they write it to the UUSC? Right. Okay, every year people ask me that. So you can just make out checks to the UUSC.
If you do it that way, it gets matched.
I'm getting to that. Yes. It's a big match, too. This year's GA Guest at Your Table theme is Small Change is Big Change. Now, we're going to, a little bit later, let you take one of these if you want to, and also a brochure, which is somewhere. Then we'll use this in just a few minutes too. Two phrases this goes back to this. Every year these things arrive, and every year I glance at them, but I rarely read them carefully, I must admit. This year I read the brochure very carefully, and two phrases just really jumped out. Got my attention in this brochure. Here's one of them. The following stories are just four examples of UUSC partners responding to great challenges with limited resources. So remember, the UUSC partners with people, with groups, local groups. And here's the other phrase. We are addressing root causes of injustice. Root causes. We're talking systemic change, which is the only kind of change that matters. Those of you who have been around Unitarian Universalism for a while know about taking this box home and putting money in it every time you sit down to have a meal together. Children usually love this ritual, but I know plenty of adults who do too. Unfortunately, families don't seem to sit down to meals as often as they used to. So you could skip the box step and go directly to the check and envelope stage, if you prefer. In the annual letter that goes out with the boxes, the current president of the UUSC wrote about, some of you have probably read this, if you got the letter. But he writes about the current president is Thomas Andrews. He says, President Trump has already slammed the door shut on Muslim refugees fleeing horrific violence in the Middle East, pardoned a racist sheriff who bragged that the sprawling tent jail he filled with Latinos in Phoenix was a concentration camp, and seen very fine people, that's a quote, rallying beneath the Confederate flag and the Nazi swastika in Charlottesville. How far will he go in fanning the flames of hatred and bigotry and cruelty? Well, Andrews answers his own question, as far as Trump can, until more people of conscience and goodwill raise our voices and cry, enough. That's the hard lesson history teaches about all purveyors of hate. They will go as far as we let them go. And that's why generations of committed supporters have stood with UUSC since our founding mission to help Jews and other refugees flee the Nazis during the Second World War. So, to that end, and to answer the question, or at least partially answer the question, how did all this start? We have a little trailer about two people named Waitstill, which is the most unusual first name I have ever heard, Sharp, and his wife, Martha.
February 23rd, 1946. My darling Martha, I hope and assume this reaches you on your return from what must have been a very exacting but very successful expedition. I must say that I would like to begin having a home again. The kids don't show their feelings too much. I see nothing but men's things in my wardrobe. I smell no perfumes. I have been quite desperate at times. I want to go on for what there is left of life with you. 7 years ago tonight, we stepped off the train into Wilson Station, and all our world has been different ever since. Ever yours. Wait still.
Waitstill Shop left the comfort of a peaceful, small Massachusetts home in order to go into Europe on the verge of war. They were motivated from the beginning to go out there into the kingdom of hell and try to get some people out.
It was the second Sunday night of 1939. I had done a full day's work at the church and decided to spend an evening in front of our fireplace. The telephone rang, and it was probably the most momentous telephone call that I ever received. "Hello, Waitstill." I knew whose voice it was, the voice of my closest friend, Everett Baker. "Would you and Martha come over to talk with me at our house here?" "Yes." He said, "Waitstill, Martha, I am inviting you to undertake the first intervention against evil by the denomination to be started immediately overseas."
My husband and I felt that something should be done. Refugees in the Sudetenland had been murdered, and people had been imprisoned and hurt.
We had two small kids, including a very tiny daughter. I said, "How many men have you offered this to?" 17, he said. I said, "Do I understand they've all turned you down?" "Yes. They think a war is definitely coming and they don't want to be in danger." I reassured Martha, "Missionaries leave their children. I'm sure ours can be left in good hands. I want to go, but I won't go without you."
I knew I would miss the children terribly, but we would only be away for a few months. I was torn between my love and duty to my children and to my husband.
As my wife Martha and I went home under the starry skies, we went home with a promise to do it.
And they did do it. Well, that was actually appropriate. Waitstill Sharp was a Unitarian minister in Massachusetts. So off he and his wife went. If you want to know what happened, you can watch the entire film, which is, what's the name of it? Silencing?
Defying the Nazis.
Defying the Nazis.
The Sharp's War.
The Sharp's War. There was a problem because they had young children, and there's still a debate about whether they should have left those children with. First, they left them with close friends, not with their relatives. And then later on during the war, they left them with relatives. But this always begs the question to me, why do some people seem to know intuitively that we're all connected and that we should, well, as humans, we should behave accordingly, shouldn't we? But why? Why some and why not others? Now, that's a bit of a rhetorical question because I think education has a lot to do with that. I think how much contact you have with people who aren't just like you is important here. For me, it was my Christian upbringing. You know, because I reference it a lot, that I had a good, solid Presbyterian upbringing, and there was no question that we were all connected, we were all equal, at least in our heads. Then there was that problem of going to Florida when I was 10, 11, and 12 and seeing the fountains that said whites only and colors only. My parents struggled with answering my question about that. So what then happened next, over the next 70 years? It's been 77 since 1939 and now, is that about right? While working with grassroots organizations and encouraging local leadership, the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee has expanded the definition of neighbor in countries throughout the world. My guess is, as I said earlier, you don't know much about what they've done. If you can go to the internet and get the history of the USC, you would be astounded at the projects they have worked on around the world. Now, I'm not going to read you the entire 77 years worth, just a couple of highlights. First of all, the Unitarian Service Committee was officially established in 1940. Remember, the Unitarians and the Universalists didn't merge until 61. So in 1945, 5 years later, the Universalist Service Committee was established. In 1946, medical missions were sent to Poland and Czechoslovakia. Think about that, 1946. Yes, with our very own Norbert Čapek. Now, that's a whole nother story. In 1954, in Gallup, New Mexico, the Navajo Community Center Project offered social services and education with help from the UUSC. Now, keep in mind, UUSC always partners with local grassroots groups in the country. 1954, also that year, a social work education program was established in Korea. 1963, the Unitarian and the Universalist Service Committees merged. 1965, the USC worked in Turkey on advanced nursing training. 1973, the UUSC helped Salvadoran clergy publish Justice and Peace, a newsletter offering self-help and literacy skills to low-income communities in El Salvador. And always keep in mind the year I'm talking about. 1975, the National Moratorium on Prison Construction began. 1975. Something has gone awry. But we're still working on that one. We're still working on a lot of these. 1981, the first UUSC local unit. In this country, we've been in other countries up until 81. It was formed in Topeka, Kansas, and campaigned against the death penalty. And that actually resulted in a vote against capital punishment. 1984, some of you will remember some of these things, the famine in Ethiopia. The USC went in and provided emergency funds to a local organization there long before the United States television crews picked up on the story. 1992, the USC with local groups responded to the riots in Los Angeles by establishing an urban emergency fund. 2013, as part of the UUSC's Compassionate Consumption campaign, the UUSC has worked with partners to improve wages and working conditions of restaurant workers. Also that same year, 2013, the UUSC helped introduce a model of urban home gardens in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, to support food sovereignty. Here's one from 2003 that I meant to look up and I haven't had time yet. Something called the What's Your Profile Projects started with the UUSC and local groups. And what it does is bring together youth from Unitarian Universalist congregations, non-UU churches, and community-based groups to explore the roots of racism and to develop ways to combat discrimination in their communities. 2003, what's your profile? I'm gonna look that one up. And it's all young people. It's geared to young people, UUs, and not UUs. And one more, in 2005, you know what happened in 2005 in this country? So the UUSC responded to a massive humanitarian crisis following Katrina and also Hurricane Rita that year. And much to my amazement, the UUSC upped its, well, first of all, the UUA and the UUSC in that year when Katrina happened sent out an appeal to raise some $3 million. We did that. But the UUSC, after Katrina, increased its overall budget by 50%. Wow. Has this organization, the UUSC, made mistakes? Oh, yes. What organization has not? During the Vietnam War, the then president of the UUA, Dana Greeley, convinced the UUSC to accept United States government money to fund a social work training program in Vietnam. Well, it turned out that the program was sponsored by the CIA. Oops. But from then on, you know, they learned a lesson. The UUSC has had a very strict policy about accepting government funds. Here's the policy. It doesn't, ever. The UUSC is a completely independent organization. And I should say here that the UUSC is not connected legally, financially, institutionally, with the Unitarian Universalist Association. That's a common misconception. Though we obviously share the same values and work towards the same goals. You've got to be carefully taught is the title of a song that some of you with my hair color might remember from the classic musical South Pacific. Now, if you were to watch South Pacific today, you'd probably grimace in some parts. However, as I wrote in the November this month's edition of Prairie Fire, our monthly newsletter, that song makes a powerful statement about racism. And it was way ahead, unfortunately, of its time. So this would have been mid to late 50s, maybe? So here are the lyrics. There aren't many. There are only three short verses. But you will note that they are not totally politically correct. And I can't remember the tune, and I only could find the, well, I didn't dig very hard, so I'm not singing it, I'm simply reading the lyrics. You've got to be taught to hate and fear. You've got to be taught from year to year. It's got to be drummed in your dear little ear. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be taught to be afraid of people whose eyes are oddly made. That's the one part I'd probably change slightly. And people whose skin is a different shade, you've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be taught before it's too late, before you are 6 or 7 or 8, to hate all the people your relatives hate. You've got to be carefully taught. That song made a huge impression on me. If we have to be carefully taught to hate, then it makes sense that we would also have to be carefully taught to love. And one of the best ways to do this is through education, which I've mentioned. And I would also include, again, experiencing people through interactions with people who aren't just like us. I've said it before, the exchange programs, the ones you and Bill have been involved in, the Rotary Club, the Friends, there's so many. I think they're responsible for as much peace as we have in the world, those programs. Here are four stories about what the UUSC, how the UUSC is currently building bridges between people. These are the stories from the brochure, which we'll give all of you a copy of in a few minutes. And I have help from my friends. So the first story, Penny, would you like the mic? You could just do it from there if you want to.
Oh, that would be nice.
I'll bet Aaron would. Yeah, Aaron's
bringing you the mic.
He's coming.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm Ursula Rakova. We feel that climate change violates our rights to continue to live on the island that we were born on and that we are connected to. Like I said, I'm Ursula, and I live at the Carteret Islands of Papua New Guinea. And we're among some of the first communities on Earth having to relocate because of climate change. Back in 2006, the Carteret Island elders began noticing sharp increases in sea surges, tides, and coastal erosion. Sea levels were rising, food sources were dwindling, and there was no formal relocation process to support the system in place. They got tired of waiting, and they decided to do something about it themselves. So they came to me. I'm a daughter of a matriarchal clan community and an environmentalist, and they asked me to lead the community to migration to higher ground. The islanders are connected to the islands. They were born there. They grew up on the islands, and having to move means detaching themselves from the islands that they're connected to. The islands are basically their identity. It's their way of life. And it's my job to keep this deep connection to the island's culture while we move from our home to Bougainvillea in the Solomon Islands. And I, to this end, I formed the organization to Lele Pisa, and that means in my language, sail in the wind on our own. And we're doing what we can to go to Bougainvillea and prepare them for us, and in turn, prepare us for moving there, finding jobs, and making the relocation as easy as possible. And the UUSC Environmental Justice and Climate Action Program focuses on assisting indigenous populations of the South Pacific and Alaska regions that rely on coastal habitats and are facing severe climate change impact on their resources.
When people in Central America have to flee intense violence, they make a dangerous journey to reach the United States border. Then they're treated more like criminals than who they actually are, survivors of trauma pursuing their legal right to seek asylum. The Obama administration decided to open new family detention centers in 2014. Since then, U.S. immigration officials have been locking up asylum-seeking families in prison-like, for-profit family detention centers, despite multiple court rulings against the practice and reports documenting inhumane conditions and damaging mental health impacts. I'm Rosemary Dodd, a Spanish and political science student at Wellesley College. I wanted to help support these detained families who are facing a convoluted asylum system without legal assistance. I'm passionate about immigration justice, and I was eager to put my Spanish language skills to work. I applied to the UU College of Social Justice's summer internship at the Refugee and Immigrant Center for Education and Legal Services, RACES. A UUSC migrant justice partner based in San Antonio, Texas, RACES provides free legal help and translation services to the women and children held in Karnes County Residential Center, one of three for-profit detention centers in the U.S. that detains families, including very young children. One of my primary tasks as an intern was to prepare women for their interviews. These have an interesting name of the Credible Fear Interviews. They need to explain why they fled and why they could not seek protection in their home country. This is a critical hurdle they must overcome before they can begin the asylum process. Sitting down with us for this preparation was often the first time migrant women heard the words, "We're here to help," after reaching the U.S. Border Patrol, being moved between multiple holding cells, and being detained at Carnes. And these are not just words. With our help, a far greater number of women passed their interviews, recounting their experiences such as kidnapping, threats, and gang violence, and then they could be released from detention. As a result of our support, rates of approval of credible fear interviews at Carnes rose from over 30%, from around 30% to over 90%. I contributed during my experience as an intern, and I left the experience with new skills and a renewed commitment to immigration justice. I think family detention is something you hear about, and you can't believe corporations are profiting from it. But being there, meeting the children, and playing with the kids, you get this huge amount of steadfast knowledge. I left San Antonio with a new commitment to protecting refugees, to ending family detention for good, and to working for justice in whichever form. Seeing and working with detained children has solidified my perspective on our global obligation to refugees.
Thank you, Robin. I am An Kyaw Mo, and I have helped work for freedom and human rights all over the world, mostly in Afghanistan, Thailand, and Liberia. But I grew up in northern Rakhine State in Burma, also known as Myanmar. I had to go back to my own country to help my own people. Many of you know that the Rakhine people are suffering systematic abuses of human rights by the Burmese military. And the Burmese, well, Burma has only been a sort of democracy. I wouldn't say we're a democracy yet, but very brief time of being a democracy following 50 years of military dictatorship. So most people don't have a clue. You don't just create a democracy, you know, the next day. Say, oh, we're not going to be a military dictatorship anymore. Now we're going to be a democracy. So I decided that what we really needed to do was train people, of course, in leadership, in the ways of democracy, and how to get along with the different ethnic groups. I founded the Center for Social Integrity, CSI, not to be confused with your television series in this country. CSI is one of UUSC's 9 partners working to promote human rights in Burma. Did you have any idea that the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee had 9 partners in this faraway place called Burma? I believe that the only way to end the violence in my home country is for youth to work together. So my CSI is geared to Burmese youth. And thanks to the UUSC, we have enough funding for a pilot program. So here's the pilot program that we're in the midst of. 3-month long program for young adults from Rakhine State, where they learn to be leaders and they learn that their religion doesn't matter. But remember now, people in my home state of Rakhine are not considered citizens. They are stateless. But we're doing pretty well here. There seem to be an awful lot of people who are really eager for this kind of program. We have 38 young adults right now in the program. We meet every 2 weeks in Yangon. That's our largest city in Burma. We discuss different events, current events. But we do a lot of role-playing, a lot of mediation and conflict resolution. Our goal is to stop problems before they happen. Whew, that's a big goal. The future belongs to the youth, I believe, and they should shape what they think is best for them. So I plan to use the same youth development and leadership model for other regions in Burma beyond the Rakhine State, so that youth can claim their rights and also be accountable citizens. And Catherine.
Same-sex sexual activity, public displays of same-sex affection, visiting gay clubs, or being involved in LGBTQI organizations are all illegal in Nigeria. Punishments range from 10 to 14 years in prison. I am Ali Dawudo, and I knew the difficulty of being a gay man in Nigeria and wanted to help others. Despite the risk, I created an underground support network so that Nigerians who had previously struggled alone had a place to share their experiences and where they did not have to hide who they were. And for a while, things went well. But the underground network was discovered. I was attacked and my partner murdered in front of me without legal repercussions. Devastated and afraid for my life, I scrambled to get a visa in order and fled to the U.S. to seek asylum. Upon arrival, the U.S. officials attempted to charge me with visa fraud and was held in Rikers Island Detention Facility for 6 months while I waited for an asylum hearing. And unfortunately, my experience is not uncommon. Facing violence and discrimination at home, many queer and transgender individuals flee to the United States in hope of better treatment and a better life. Yet due to an increasingly hostile immigration detention and policing system, one that is particularly hostile to LGBTQI detainees, many queer and transgender immigrants find themselves facing new forms of violence and discrimination. Queer and transgender immigrants are 15 times more likely to be sexually assaulted in detention centers and often face discrimination in other forms, such as being denied hormone medications or being held in solitary confinement for their own safety. The Queer Detainee Empowerment Project, or QDEP, a UUSC partner, advocates against this discriminatory treatment and supports queer immigrants in and outside of detention. With UUSC's help, QDEP supports LGBTQI immigrants in detention at Rikers and provides structural, health, wellness, education, legal, and emotional support post-release. And QDEP was there to help me. During the 6 months I was held in detention, I was paid an hour-long visit every 2 weeks and connected through a pen pal program. They made regular calls to Rikers to speed up my asylum hearing, and the executive director and founder of QDEP, Jamila Hamami, was extremely persistent about making the calls. With their help, I was released from Rikers and granted asylum status. I was placed in stable housing with a host home and was provided with financial support during the first 3 months as I trained to become a carpenter. Today, I attend weekly meetings and continue the pen pal program and exploring what it means to be out as a gay man without fear.
Thank you, Catherine and Robin and Penny. Our forces were slight. Our goal lay far in the distance. It was clearly visible, though I myself was unlikely to reach it. So passed my time, which had been given to me on Earth. Go in peace, don't despair, the UUSC is there. I'm into a little so, greet your neighbor, drink coffee, enjoy the rest of the holiday weekend.